Welcome to the Space Cave. I am David Huntsberger. You may know me through stand-up comedy, or Professor Blastoff, or perhaps the television show Reactor on the Sci-Fi Channel. Neither of the last two things are around any longer, but you might know me from them. Did Professor Blastoff for 4 years, did Reactor for 5 weeks, and now embarking on a new podcast called The Space Cave. Which is just me sitting down with educated people, having some beers, chatting about the world, seeing what they know, and seeing if I can learn something from that, and checking in with the world at large as well, meaning you guys, meaning people who listen or want to be on a podcast and chat with me a little bit. I have been calling people through Twitter. The name, The Space Cave, or Space Cave, whatever you want to call it, is, I think it's common nowadays for people to have a place they go to get away, and something they envision in their head all the time, how life would be a little easier or better if they were on a deserted island, or living out in the woods and not having to deal with all the hassles of society and Earth, and life just gets a little too complicated and a little too busy sometimes, and it's nice to just escape that a little bit. And some people have maybe darker thoughts and want to escape that way. And I hope this show is more of just something positive and just a relaxing way and hopefully an enjoyable way to get away a little bit and just look back down and reflect on Earth, learn a little bit about it. So take yourself, project yourself out into the world somewhere, a nice little fort you've built, surround yourself with some stars, or just the dark lack of stars, and maybe you don't even want the light in. That's getting into a whole territory of dark and light. That's ridiculous. Anyway, take yourself somewhere that's quiet and relaxing. Turn on the podcast, and we'll learn about planet Earth together. And like I said, I've been checking with people through Twitter, and I appreciate people who've tweeted their phone numbers out into the world. I hope you haven't been riddled with, I don't know what would happen if telemarketers are still doing their thing or whatnot. I would imagine you're pretty safe. I've mostly been tweeting them from my account, which is Huntsberger Junk, but I also started one for the podcast, which is space_cave. I'm not sure how much I will use that one. Maybe I'll only use it for the tweeting of phone numbers. So if you want to follow that, that's a good way to do it. Otherwise, keep your eye on my Twitter account, and I will occasionally just say, hey, tweet me your phone number, and then I will call you. And so this is the first person I called. This is James Curl, or maybe Curly, I don't know, at James Curl. James spelled normally, C-U-R-L-E, and here's our conversation.
Hello?
Hi, is this James?
Is this David?
Yes, it is. You recognize my voice.
Yes. Long time Professor Blastoff listener.
Hey, terrific. Well, now we're talking in the Space Cave.
Space Cave, wonderful.
Yeah. Do you like that title?
Yeah.
Okay, great. What's we have 10 minutes, so what's new with you? What's going on in the world? What is interesting you? What's confusing you, confounding you, inspiring you? What's going on?
Oh, wow. Man, so much, I guess. I'm a dad of three, so when you're trying to raise kids and kind of teach them right from wrong, sometimes it gets a little bit crazy when you look at certain things out there in the world and don't have good answers as to what's going on. You know, of course, we got what's going on in Ferguson that's kind of messed up. We've got Donald Trump somehow leading the presidential polls, and you've got to try to explain how a guy like him can somehow be leading, a major political party, at least as far as public opinion is concerned.
How do you break that to your kids? What do you say?
I don't know. Luckily, I guess they're still a little bit young to be too involved in politics. And it's kind of a shame that you would feel like you would need to shield your kids from the political process for fear of it kind of, you know, corrupting them or being a bad example on them. But, you know, I've been trying to kind of, you know, not get too far into that sort of thing because it, I don't know, I get frustrated by it because it does seem to be just a bunch of grown children bickering and arguing with one another, unfortunately, over the most powerful position in America.
Yeah, that's what's, it's so disheartening. I mean, no one ever wants to feel completely apathetic, but when you watch it and it feels so much like professional wrestling, and then even if you like a candidate and how much they're influenced by lobbyists or campaign contributions, that even if they said a bunch of stuff that you liked, they get into the mix and they no longer have the power to enact any of that stuff. And that's disheartening. And then you see there's always kind of this feeling that the true majority of the population is comprised of people with very different ethics and values and thoughts as to what you have. And then someone gets up there who voices those unchecked and unfiltered, and people don't reel back and go, this person is insane. They go, yeah, that's secretly how I've been feeling. Let's murder immigrants. I mean, the idea that we're going to look back and look back on this time period and everyone feels, I would hope, unanimously terrible about slavery and the Holocaust and a number of other atrocities committed on a people. And yet the way that we're treating people who like migrant workers who pick fruit in a hot field all day, and there would be someone to stand up and go, those people have had it too good for too long. Screw them. We got to hunt them down and ship them out of here. It would just be great if El Chapo got his hands on Trump, it seems like.
Well, I think the real shame is that I consider myself a centrist, you know, someone who, I guess if there was a party that I kind of more closely aligned with than any of them would be perhaps libertarian. Mm-hmm. You know, I am very skeptical of kind of political parties in general and the government, you know, in general, not to say I'm an anarchist by any means, but I'm kind of the belief that the least involvement they have in our lives is necessary somewhat. You know, the better. Mm-hmm. I do realize that, you know, there are many things like police force and fire and those sorts of things that are certainly very vital to our survival as a society.
Yeah.
But, you know, I, for the most part, I'm a centrist and someone who believes that, you know, if you leave us well enough alone, we'll usually make the right decisions and do the right things. And then, you know, the shame of it is that in order for a candidate on either side, be it Republican or Democrat, to gain traction and you know, gain in the polls, they have to appeal to the farthest elements on both sides.
Yeah.
And it seems like a real shame to me. It would be wonderful if there was some way that a centrist could come out and say, you know, I feel like people should pretty much be allowed to make their own decisions, and we shouldn't, you know, dictate too much in people's lives if we don't have to. I think most people feel that way. It's just, you know, when it comes time to whittling down the list of candidates, there doesn't seem a good way for a centrist candidate to kind of make their way out of the political process. And the whole system seems to grind a lot of good people down. And so you wind up with people who are, you know, egotistical and in it largely for themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have I don't think you end up with candidates that are really representative of what large majority of the American populace feels. So it's just a shame. It really is.
Where do you live?
I live in North Carolina, near Raleigh and kind of the more rural area outside of here.
I think you might like, have you read the League of Rivals, Abe Lincoln biography? It came out a few years ago.
I have not. I'll be upfront and honest with you that I'm not the reader that I should be.
Oh, I actually listened to it as an audiobook. So if you're not like into reading, you know, lengthy books like that, I would recommend it if just that I think you would enjoy how he came to like get the nomination, which was he was kind of someone that didn't speak out or against really anything too passionately. He just kind of like played it a little bit down the middle, and the people he was running against, you know, they kind of were on the far ends of things, and it divided people so much that he was kind of the middle ground person, which I guess nowadays couldn't really happen. People have to come out swinging and have a real big agenda, and they have to appeal to you.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like in order for a candidate to gain traction, either positively or negatively, they have to provide sound bites, and mm-hmm. you're not going to produce a whole lot of sound bites saying, you know, yeah, I think, you know, it might be best if we kind of, you know, let people to their own devices. That's not a real controversial stand, and, you know, it doesn't really get you in any digital ink, as it were, and it's a shame. It really is. I don't know if there's anything that can be done, because, you know, everything now is so instantaneous with the way Twitter and Facebook and all of our digital media shares information. I don't know that there's a way to kind of allow someone who has a more moderate opinion to kind of stand out above all the din and noise that these candidates nowadays produce. My hope is that the further we get along with this process, as we whittle down, you know, like especially on the Republican side, is that if you give, you know, the saying goes, if you give someone just enough rope, they'll hang themselves. I'm hoping that Donald Trump will make such a big ass of himself on a public stage, you know, that eventually people will say, you know what, let's dial this back a little bit. Maybe this guy isn't the right guy to be leading the most powerful country in the world.
I would assume that's bound to happen. It just seems baffling now that the polls and the way they're insinuating that he would carry that nomination. I don't believe it. I feel like you say, like, one, if there were an actual vote, I don't think he would get it in spite of how the numbers look right now. And I also think the more time that goes by beforehand, he's only going to say dumber things, or that's what they all do. You know, like, they all will say something about the earth being 6,000 years old or somewhere along those lines, where even the people that are the most devout supporters go, oof, that's going to be hard to follow you there, Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, obviously during the preliminary and the primary process, it's not uncommon for candidates of the same party to kind of speak out and attack one another, again, to try to build sound bites and make a name for themselves. But it does seem like more so than even in past years, just about everybody that's vying for the presidential nomination or the Republican nomination is like, man, this guy is just a nut job. do you really want this guy behind the wheel of the United States? So I think that's telling, and I do hope that common sense, as much as it's been challenged this year, I hope it does ultimately wind up to, you know, rule the day. And I think eventually, I don't know who among the 16 or 32 or however many candidates they've got vying for the position, I don't know who's going to come out ahead. But I would wager good money that it's not ultimately going to be Trump that is vying for that position. And like you said, if he does somehow wind up getting the nomination, I think he loses in a huge rout, because I really don't think people view him seriously enough to be the leader of the free world.
Well, if for no other reason than I want that to work out for you, I hope you are right. And thanks for tweeting your number. It's nice chatting with you. And
all right, so that was calling and talking to a complete stranger, which I enjoy. Try to find out what's going on in the world. It could be anything. Maybe if with him it happened to be about politics and stuff. And he said some really nice things after our conversation that I didn't leave in, because it just felt a little odd to have to be including that. But thanks, James. It was really nice of you, and I appreciate that. And everyone who said nice things about Professor Blastoff in general and my participation in it and all that, I really appreciate it, and I hope you guys like this podcast as well. And it's going to be its own thing. And I guess the reason for doing it, if people ask me that, like, why are you doing another podcast? There's just a lot of conversations I haven't had and still want to have, a lot of things I want to learn about. And the main one of those, which we never really got to, was planetary exploration. And so the person I spoke with this week about that as a geochemist from UCLA, a PhD. This guy, Matthew Wielicki, although in Polish you say it Wielicki. He came over and had some Ami Gang three-headed raven saison seasonal ale, which a friend of mine gave me at a barbecue, and it was really great beer. I think I might pronounce the brewery name wrong in the actual episode, so you have to forgive me for that. But I've later learned that is Ami Gang, O-M-M-E, and Matthew knew it was a saison just by tasting it, which is insane, but he's a brewer and understands beer really well. So that was really impressive. It's rare you see someone sip a beer and go, "What's it, a saison?" I was like, blown away by that. And then we had a nice chat, and he was a really interesting guy, really knowledgeable, and so we will get to that now. Here's the Ami Gang from Cooperstown, New York, Game of Thrones, Three-Eyed Raven, and then you noticed it was a saison ale.
A saison ale, that's correct.
Yeah. Matthew, if you're Polish, Wielicki, and if you're just a regular old English-speaking yokel, Wielicki.
That's right. That's right.
And you have a PhD in the department, well, you work in the Department of Earth, Planetary, and Space Sciences at UCLA.
That's right. And that's where I got my PhD.
Nice. In that field? In what particular field?
Physics? I'm a geochemist.
Geochemist.
Yeah.
So I saw this thing the other day. I don't know when this will come out, but the stories like this could be the other day. It's relative
sure.
to time. This was a long, long way from us, and yet there was an asteroid that went by that was just like packed full of, was it titanium? Or
yeah, like
platinum.
Platinum,
no,
group
platinum.
Metals.
Yeah, platinum.
They call them platinum group metals.
Okay, and
yeah.
So were you just like watering at the mouth hearing that?
That's a really expensive asteroid flying by, but then
yeah.
actually grab that thing and do something with it. It still seems a little crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're talking about the asteroid mining is the new thing now.
But I mean, we would have to know of it, what, 200 years in advance, even longer?
Well, some of these things are nice because they're basically orbiting Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They're called Trojans, Earth Trojans. So they're like these little near-Earth asteroids that are orbiting Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as we know their kind of orbital dynamics, that's fine. We could build something to intercept it in the next decade or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things are coming from way far away, and they'll pass every 10,000 years or
yeah.
something like that.
Okay.
So, you know, you see that thing come by and sorry, nobody's gonna be around, you know, to
just
catch that.
Feel like, yeah, it's flying by and you're standing at the fence reaching out and it's a ball that just sails right over your head.
And then keeps sailing all the way for another few tens of millions
of miles. Is there a way that we could coerce it into joining at least a kind of an orbit?
Yeah,
I mean, it's passing by.
Oh
right?
yeah, they're talking about putting like a rocket on the
mm-hmm.
side of this thing because it doesn't have really any friction. So once you divert it a little bit, it'll just continue on that path.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can divert it way far away, you only have to move it just a little bit, and then when it gets close to Earth, it will be a ways away from where it was originally.
But with that, like, that's always been something that's strange to me, that things pass by. How big do they need to be to, and what is pulling them? The sun is always pulling
them? The sun.
But that's things are headed away from the sun, but they're just in an orbit that we don't recognize.
So they're traveling away from the sun until they reach a point where they get pulled back
mm-hmm.
by the sun. And then they come back,
so would it
wing
be
around the sun, and then fly back out.
Okay, so we think of orbits typically as being like
circular.
Ovular,
yeah,
circular.
Elliptical.
But this would be like a really narrow oval or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, and what it does is like, these are usually things that are like comets. They'll come real close to the sun,
mm-hmm.
Like within Mercury's orbit, and then they go out way past Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back next to the sun, and that's what really excites them. So you think about like, if you're rolling a marble in a cone, the closer it gets down, the faster it starts to spin.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. The comet or asteroid or comet can get really close to the sun. It goes really, really fast, and then it travels out and slows down, and then finally starts to come back in after it crosses way past Pluto.
And is it dependent on speed and mass,
yeah.
its ability to go past the sun? Because wouldn't it get too close and kind of dance with fire, literally, and get sucked into the sun?
Not usually. These things are traveling so fast that unless they directly impact the sun, they could, even if they're just a little bit away, they're going to wing around the sun and then keep going, tossed out somewhere else. They're not going to actually like spiral in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they got enough energy. But you're exactly right. So the mass and the velocity, mv squared.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So that isn't mv squared. Force is F equals ma, and then...
And kinetic energy.
Kinetic energy.
Is mv squared. Exactly. And that's all these things are carrying. And then remember, space is empty. Mm-hmm. There's no drag. So right. You take a baseball and you throw it. Well, that baseball is going to fall to the earth because gravity's pulling on it, but also because it's getting slowed down by the force of the air.
Yeah.
You throw that baseball in space, and it's just going to continue on at that velocity until something interacts with it. Or it feels another object.
But so isn't that, I mean, isn't it a landmine or the field of mines space, essentially, of celestial objects that can enact like a gravity on that baseball you throw out there?
Yes. So if it cuts close to Jupiter or something like that, that will distort it.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's Jupiter and the sun are the two players. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is kind of
too
a bystander.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're all too small. So it's really Jupiter controls, like if you're out in the outer solar system, that's going to perturb your orbit. That's going to either wing you into the sun or wing you out of the solar system completely.
So how do we get a rocket? We see all this platinum zooming by, this precious platinum. All we see are dollar signs.
Yep.
We go, and how it was like, what, not that far, like 500,000 miles, which is real far, but relative to space, not that bad.
Yeah, I want
to
say it's like it was within the moon's orbit.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's pretty close.
The moon is...
Oh, now you're going to get me... You
know, this is one of those things that people, how do you not know?
Google that.
150,000?
Well, let me give you a guess.
Okay.
The moon is 170,000 kilometers away.
Okay. Oh, it comes right up. It is 238,000 miles.
Oh,
well,
that's like almost 400,000 kilometers.
Yeah.
Does it say that in kilometers?
Let me get this kilometer.
You got to be in SI units here.
I'm one of these English units. I always wanted to switch over strictly to the metric system, but you do it unless you're working in the field of science and math. You just sound ridiculous.
That's true,
but I do prefer it.
But you realize you're measuring things after some guy's foot from the
It makes no
sense. Century or something.
Mechanics. The first George. Give me 9/16. Yeah, this is absurd.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. So 407.
400. Okay, so let's just go 400,000. That's a number I should know.
Well,
so I think it's within.
You guessed it correctly.
Within that orbit, these things are flying by. Yeah, and some of them are circling within that orbit. So you don't want something that's coming way out from far away. You want something that's nearby and staying nearby.
Yeah.
The problem is getting onto that thing and then extracting the stuff you want.
Mm-hmm.
That is crazy.
So, but passing at the distance it did, will it be affected? You're saying the sun is dictating it at this point.
So. If it's in the asteroid belt and it's just an asteroid that crosses Earth's orbit, then the sun, because it's orbiting the sun. But if it's one of these near-Earth asteroids, then it could be caught by the Earth's orbit, and it's just another moon, basically. You could think of a little moon.
Yeah.
These little near-Earth asteroids that are orbiting the Earth.
But when it's in the sun's orbit, we would have to write a letter to future generations, be like, hey, in 1,500 years, we saw this thing. It's coming back around.
Right.
And they could bank on that, get out there, send a rocket to it.
But proof of concept, we'll do something that's close by.
Okay.
You know, just let's prove to ourselves that we could do it. And then let's go to one of these big boys that you could really...
What would we do? You're the team manager on that. You're this grizzled old, like, space cowboy. Like, we got to get a rocket on it.
You're just going to... You're going to completely demolish that thing of resources. But you don't care because it's not a really... You know, we're basically doing this to our planet.
Yeah.
But we have to live on our planet. So if you think about it, it's kind of cool to go and just basically scour another planet for the resources and then bring them back here so we don't have to do it.
Wouldn't that be so gross, though, to see the people with the platinum teeth and wedding rings and rims on their car?
Already.
I know, but it'd be like we went out into space. There could have been maybe microbes or something we couldn't even perceive, a type of metal that somehow metabolizes platinum that was like, we're happy on this asteroid.
But there's a bunch of those. There's a bunch of asteroids. We're just going to take one of, you know.
Isn't that our mentality, though? I mean, to explore space, which everyone, you know, seemingly everyone should be excited about it. Well, look what's out there. But at the base level of it is that we're going to do that. We're just going to exploit it and destroy everything.
I would argue that I would rather do what you're saying and go out there just for the exploration sake. But it costs a lot of money to go to space.
Yeah.
And people just don't want to fund it for, like, let's go see what's out there. You know, they like that. They're excited. And they'll give you a buck on your Kickstarter, you know. But unless an oil company or a mining company says, oh, we can make $100 billion on this asteroid, let's invest $10 billion to actually shoot a rocket up there, which is going to cost you the launch costs alone are in the hundreds of millions.
Mm-hmm.
This is just launching nothing.
And there's no guarantee of success.
Oh, no.
Even with just each launch.
You're insured.
Yeah.
But, you know, it takes 10 years sometimes to build one of these spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Pluto one, that took 9 years to get to Pluto.
Yeah.
So you think about the guy that started on that was probably a grad student and is now getting into his late career.
Yeah.
20 years later, now he's getting the data. He was the instrument that he was working
on. And how did, I mean, that was curious to me in that a decade ago, send it out there. You think of modems and wireless networks. You couldn't even set your modem 20 feet away if you had a wireless connection.
Right.
How is it sending this back from Pluto?
Yeah.
How is this data getting to us?
That's the deep space network. This is all radio signals. It's amazing. These are the long lost heroes of the space program because there's guys that sit in the desert, in these remote places. There's one in Mojave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just out in the middle of nowhere. That's the whole point. You don't want a bunch of noise from everybody's Wi-Fi and modems. And there's just a couple guys sitting there with these huge antennas. And they're the ones collecting all the data.
You know? Are those guys like?
They must be strange.
Hear that, man? Do you hear that? That's Pluto talking to us.
I mean, they really are, though. There's one in Australia, and then there's one in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one in Mojave. And then as the Earth rotates, the New Horizons is sending its signal to a different one every time. But it takes 8.5 hours each way.
And it's a pixel at a time. What are they sending back?
So they got, I want to say, in the 30 to 50 gigabytes of data.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take them like the next, I don't know, from what I remember, tens of weeks to send that data back. So something you download in like, I don't know, an hour, well, maybe 3 hours. Mm-hmm. 30 gigs is pretty, that's big.
You know,
that's maybe a couple movies.
Okay.
They're going to take tens of weeks to send back.
You're saying it's radio waves or is it satellite?
It's radio waves.
It's just
radio waves.
Radio waves can transmit data.
Yep.
Whew, man. Yep.
So just zeros and ones, blips, right? It's all digital.
Yeah.
So they're just different blips for different data. And so it's.
But I don't understand. I mean, this is so beyond me,
this
and I apologize to people that are like, "What are you? How are you not getting this?"
There's some ham radio but guys right now going, "You idiots!"
But a one and a zero, it doesn't. You take a picture like a puzzle. You know, you don't necessarily know what that one and zero equates to. Like, oh, it's a kind of a half red tone in this pigmented area here.
Yeah, but when you have a million ones and zeros,
mm-hmm.
then you know you could easily say that lightly shaded red is the fifth decimal place is going to be a one instead of a zero.
So this isn't a camera. It's observing Pluto.
No, so there's a camera on it, but the way it has to digitize the data and then send it to us, the only way we can send it is through radio waves.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only things that are going to travel that far.
Wow.
And actually get picked up and for us to do anything with
yeah.
it. Yeah.
That in itself is such unbelievable technology.
That's how we send it its information, too.
Mm-hmm. So we're sending back to it.
Oh, yeah. When New Horizons... Now I'm going to get mixed up. It's either New Horizons or the Mars rover. One of those, we sent it, or not we, as I had anything involved in, NASA sent it.
Yeah.
And they didn't even have the software on the system while it's flying. They had to upload it in flight because the software wasn't ready. But
what?
They had a launch date that was set.
Yeah.
And so they launched the thing without the software. And then they uploaded the software as it was flying to Mars or to Pluto.
So getting the bird up in the air, getting it out into space, isn't as like, you got to have all your bags packed, kiddo. We can send them out there and then be like, don't worry, we'll upload your toothbrush, essentially.
Yep.
We'll give you the software you need.
Exactly.
That's impressive. So could we change we can't change the trajectory.
We can't.
And we have boosters and things on thrusters?
Yep.
So this
thing doesn't carry a ton of fuel.
Right.
Because that's weight.
You can use them just a couple times.
So you use them, you burn them up. Yep.
Are we counting on, say, New Horizons, it's called?
Yeah.
Are we counting on it to just do the same ellipses as the asteroid? Like,
no.
it'll reach a rubber band moment and come on back?
Because its velocity vector was out away from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just going to continue on, just like Voyagers
1
and 2. They're
30 years deep in that now.
Yeah, they're almost out of what we would consider our solar system. Like the influence of the sun, they almost don't feel any influence of the sun anymore. They're outside the sun's pull.
I there's something so I'm surprised there hasn't been like a romantic comedy made about that or something.
Right? But it's sad because those things, all they do is they send back a blip.
Mm-hmm.
It's
still
like,
alive.
Yep.
Still alive.
But there's a guy that's been looking at those things for, they were launched in
He's so 70s? Jealous of those Mojave guys, too. Yeah,
right? They probably
you guys get all kinds of action.
All I got's blip, blip, blip. But, you know, he's been employed for 4 years.
Yeah.
So that's not bad.
No, that's not too bad. And they will never... I mean, to put it in the scope of the galaxy, I mean, they're a long way from getting anywhere remotely close to exiting the Milky Way, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I mean, I think you would have to go thousands, if not tens of thousands of light years at the speed of light before you would...
That's so crazy. And we think that our lives are, like, really matter.
Not if you study Earth science. Yeah. It really puts you in your place.
It's,
you know,
gotta.
We think of time in billions and millions of years. You know, people are like, oh, you know, humans have been walking the Earth for hundreds of thousands of years or something. I'm like, that's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. So what excites you about it?
I like that it puts us in our place. I feel more, I don't know, it feels more exciting to me to be part of a system than to be some weird being that God placed on the planet, you know, as Adam and Eve. Like, that's boring to me. 4.5 billion years of evolution to end up with us. That's cool.
Yeah.
Like, look at our eyes. They're the same as like a fish eye almost.
Kind of.
The basics, you know, the ocular lens and everything. That's crazy to me that they have the same eye that we have and that a monkey has. And that's way more cool than some being saying like here and here and here.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I love it. I love that idea that we are very insignificant. It makes you realize that your problems are really nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm stressing out about trying to drive over here in traffic.
Yeah.
And then I think,
but do you manage it well? Because it still gets to you.
No, I'm horrible. Yeah, it gets to me totally. It means nothing. So I have all these thoughts, but then it doesn't translate into any part of my life.
It'd be so nice if you could. I mean, I feel like I've done an okay job with... People ask me on occasion, especially with the television show, like, are you nervous? It's a big deal. And I just think of that. I think of how big things are, and this is, you know,
it's
only a 30-minute program on basic cable. It's not that important.
Right.
But it's hard a lot of times to keep that in perspective, though.
Sure, it's important to us.
And if people go like, oh, I'm so nervous, and you start going, think about how tiny we are and how inconsequential we are and how big, like Voyager heading out there, and they're never going to escape in however many... lifespan of a million generations, they'll still be heading out, not even close to leaving. There's something so weird about that. And yet you're into space exploration. If you had a thing that would zip you around at faster than the speed of light and examine all the parts of it, every area, would you go do it?
Do I know I'm coming back?
You know you're gonna get, let me see, you know you're gonna get to see as many places as you would ever want. But the question I think would be, would you want to go back to Earth?
Can I take my family? I just had a little baby.
Okay, You can take your family. Okay. You can load up your whole house. Your house becomes
the
ship.
The dog, the fam, and the wife.
And you can Skype and communicate with friends, loved ones.
Oh, for sure, we're gone.
You're taking off.
Let's go.
No, but what would excite you about that? Like, the things you would miss, people always go, I miss cheeseburgers. I miss the smell of, you know, summer. I miss the
sunset. I wouldn't even
think
about it. There'd be something new and exciting every next day. You wouldn't even think about what you're missing.
What scares you then?
Dying.
Just death.
See, the capsule feel like rupturing in space.
Yeah. But that's being in traffic. That's having to be content with, like, and pass that along to your kid. You're looking at your kids, a next generation, and going, unless we land on some sort of world that has similar DNA, this is it.
I got my wife.
But you have kids that you know are never going to love anyone by, like, a large percentage. They're never going to fall in love. They won't get married. They won't have experiences. I mean, they're having these amazing experiences.
Adam and Eve did it.
Now you're back to that.
We can colonize a planet, right? Me and the wife.
Yeah. I mean, you want to get to a new planet and just set up shop.
Yeah, maybe we have to take a couple extra couples because it's going to be a little weird for the kids.
Sorry, you can't.
I was
nice enough to let you take your family. I can't spare it.
Well, then I don't know. Then that's going to be, that's a tough call. That's a tough call.
It would scare me, the people you would run into and always being, like, the ship breaking up, but that would be instant death. But people coming into your orbit and going, hey, come and join us.
There's other people?
But theoretically, like beings that, and never knowing if you can trust them. Is this a ploy? Are we in trouble? Is this world gonna, are we food on this planet? That would be hard to get used to.
I don't have that, though.
Really?
Yeah.
You just want to see. I mean, it's a.
I don't think that somebody or some being is going to expend all that energy to go into another solar system just to attack it or to.
Yeah, but what if. All right, what if your model that I made for you of your house that can go faster than the speed of light and zip everywhere, what if that's kind of common? Other worlds have done that too, and they become just like a bug zapper on those planets. So it's not like they've developed a technology. They're just used to people like coming to their world. Yeah. Psst. Yeah, they see so many people trying to come to their world because maybe it looks like cotton candy from far away, and you're like, kids, let's go there.
Well, that's an interesting question because I'm an advocate for... So SETI, have you heard of SETI?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's...
I think of the Mojave guys. That's what I thought of as SETI.
Yeah, so that's they're probably involved in that. That's probably some of it. But they just got $100 million donations. Mm-hmm. We're out there. We're listening.
Right.
Well, I would argue that we should also be signaling. But people argue that, no, what if we're going to signal a, you know, some hostile being?
Yeah, that guy in Australia warned against that.
Yeah, yeah. But I just, it's weird to me to listen, but be like secretive, like, ooh, we're just listening here, you know. And we've been sending out signals for, I don't know, when was the TV invented and the radio? Maybe, I don't know, the radio is probably pretty old. A couple hundred years? 1800s, maybe?
In the radio, I don't... Yeah, like Marconi, late 1800s?
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. So those signals are traveling. But before that, there's nothing that was leaving the planet mm-hmm. that anybody could identify. So let's say they're traveling at the speed of light. They're nowhere near the closest star.
Yeah.
We have nothing to worry about.
Unless
our signal has not gone anywhere. We haven't been around. We haven't been producing any signals. So why not start sending out like a, hey, we're friendly.
By the
don't
time
point your laser at us.
But how would we communicate friendliness? I mean, don't you? Isn't there a level of mistrust with humans? And I would imagine most other, if it were a civilization, would be the same way. Like, but to our core, there's some decent elements. But the fringe is kicking over Hitchbot. It's just scared and angry and mean. And
what's kicking over Hitchbot?
Oh, he's a robot that the Canadians made to send around, and he would go, hi, or she, her voice, hi, I am Hitchbot. I'm a talkative robot. Would you give me a ride? And people would lift up this robot, put it in their car, and drive it along, and then Hitchbot would have conversations with them.
Oh.
And so someone dropped it off in Philadelphia, and a drunk guy walking along kicked it over.
So kicking
over Hitchbot is such a perfect example of humanity. We're like, that guy didn't know. Maybe he's not even mean. He's just dumb.
Yeah, that's a fair point, because if an animal walks into another animal's den, it's not like it's like, hey, welcome.
Right.
Check out my den.
Yeah.
You know?
There's like, that terror. That's immediate.
Yeah, they're going to attack or they're going to defend. So I guess there is that natural instinct. But I mean,
do animals have like a, hey, I'm cool, bro.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can trust me. I just want to look around.
I'm just
a little
passing by. So I mean, but that is, aren't we above animals? Haven't we stepped above that? We can.
Well, our SETI programs are designing new horizons. The people that everyone walks around feeling like they're intelligent, and such a small percentage of the population is not, or is.
I was gonna say, wait a minute.
Yeah, no, such a small percentage is. That those are the ones that they should be in charge, and maybe even doing these things almost like in a secretive way, going, I know you think you're smart because you read The Economist. We cannot trust you with aliens. You're going to freak out and you kick them over.
Yeah. I still want a signal.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I feel like I'm the NSA if I'm just listening and I'm not like being like, hey, here I am. Like,
yeah.
Why are we so secretive? What are we hiding?
Well, what about
we
the Earth disk? Isn't that on Voyager? I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was like a little CD, golden CD thing. That
yeah.
Just like
it's got like baby sounds
legs.
And hello in a bunch of languages.
Yep. And then it has
just some Carl Sagan stuff on there.
It does. It has the Drake Equation.
Yeah.
And then it has that weird.
Does it have pi or something like that?
But it's in like figures. It almost looks like hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
Like it's some weird thing that you're supposed to be able to decipher that, you know, people are on the planet.
We're here and we're nice. Now enjoy some Billy
Ocean. Yeah,
we're
the third planet from this sun and something like that. But
it's almost kind of directions. That's friendly of us.
Yeah, right? Point your laser this way. But I'm a big advocate for sending up a satellite that comes back to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So like we were just talking about these asteroids that go away and come back, why not send up a satellite that comes back to the planet in 5,000 years, 10,000 years, and 50,000 years?
Yeah.
Like what insurance do we have that we're not going to kill ourselves?
Yeah.
And then a few people survive, but all the technology's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever watched that History? Is it History? They have like cities after people, or the world after people.
Right, yeah.
And they show you how, like, we keep everything on hard drives and things like that. It's gone.
Yeah.
Give it a decade or 100 years, and these things rust, and the buildings are overgrown,
right,
falling apart. 1,000 years, almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you wipe it clean of just a few people, and they have to take tens of generations or something, send up an asteroid back. But it's going to be a little space capsule, and it's going to have in it, like, all the information. A DVD drive, and how to build a DVD drive and read the DVD. And a
what
monitor.
If that's happening, though, and it has a certain destination that it goes to, and that's where it only lands on that specific spot on Earth, and then...
So, it needs to be, like, some sort of... Yeah, you have to tell everybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
That
but there's no
is
one...
Is
there, are there people on the planet still?
Yeah, oh, yeah, there has to be a few little tribal things mm-hmm. that are trying to get started.
And you
want to
make a DVD player straight away.
I want to... We'll deliver the DVD player in the capsule.
Oh, okay.
You know, with a little battery, and it'll just... It'll walk them through how to start making power,
mm-hmm.
how to smelt metal, how to, you know, just a simple tutorial.
It's so
tutorial.
Frustrating for them, like a YouTube... you know, video tutorial where they're watching it and the battery dies.
That would suck.
And they go, oh, no, I was just, come on, I was just smelting. I was right in the middle of smelting.
It's going to be a little pre the fixing the battery stage or building a solar panel. Maybe that will start with that.
Start there.
We'll start with
simple.
How to make a solar panel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could power your batteries, and then you'll go back to the Bronze Age and you could build your first tools.
Could you do this? I mean, I feel like so many of us live with, like, I couldn't wire up a radio. I have no idea how even a phonograph works.
If it was, like, their only bit of survival, they could do it. Humans are
okay.
tough, you know, ingenuitive.
I always think about, like, you said that the... like, he trailed off.
Ingenuitive? Was that, is that a word? Ingenuity?
Humans being, say, gone for 1,000 years, if aliens have visited us every 1,000 years, they've been here millions of times... So they see these large gaps, and there've probably been times where there weren't anything, there was not anything going on.
I don't know if aliens have visited us that many times.
You don't think so?
I don't know if that's, if we still don't, we don't know how they could travel those distances.
Yeah.
It has to have wormholes. That's the only way.
Right. What about this? What do you know about dark energy?
I know that we call it dark energy because nobody can explain what it is.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. That makes me feel like we've all, idiots and geniuses alike, have like,
yes.
You can try cracking it. It's like the sword and the stone. What if it is
kind
of...
It's like 80-something percent of the all the matter and the maybe more.
It's
the majority of space.
Yeah.
Yes, that we don't know.
So what if it is like a crowd... And you put yourself on it like crowd surfing, and if you say the right thing, if you coerce it, it can zip you through it, not necessarily a wormhole, but pass you along so faster than light, faster because it's
Mm-mm.
not a speed, it's moving you.
Mm-mm.
Nothing? No
Mm-mm.
chance?
No chance.
It's really dumb. But I like that. I think we need stupid ideas.
It's great if E doesn't equal MC squared.
Yeah. I hate that equation is so short.
If E equals MC squared, then your mass will increase when you go faster than the speed of light to keep E.
Right.
And so, decrease. So then, you're
going to
be nothingness.
As you go faster and faster, you become tiny, but your mass increases is that how it goes?
Works one or the other.
Yeah,
I don't know. Now we're getting into physics. I'm a geochemist.
Okay.
Need to get
so
a
physicist.
So
yeah, explain to me more about that then. Geochemistry and exploring space. Planetary exploration.
Yeah, so I mean, there's only two ways we can get information from looking at a planet.
Mm-hmm.
Either looking at it and saying, like, there's a crater, there's a volcano,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's pretty simple
like
stuff.
Like on Mars recently.
Exactly.
That weird, what's it, like shale? There's something weird happening
in
the
rock. Yeah, they have like a lot of these like sandstone layer or sedimentary layers,
mm-hmm.
Carbonates and things. And so they think there were lakes there and they evaporated away. So you could do that. You can look at it. Or you can actually do some chemistry on the rocks. And then that really tells you, you know, hammers down what's going on with the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Certain rocks form in certain environments. They have certain chemical signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And we could tell those. We can also date rocks.
Really? Wait, to scale back a little bit, like chemical signatures, meaning this environment is rich in nitrogen and or helium, and these rocks
certain rocks only form in certain environments. So like sedimentary rocks that are little bits of other rocks that are formed together, they need certain processes like weathering and water to actually form. So if you find on Mars, they got really excited because they found these little rounded pebbles
mm-hmm.
that were all stuck together in this little ledge. And this little ledge was kind of all what we call a conglomerate. It was a rock made out of a whole bunch of other rocks.
Mm-hmm.
But the little rocks were pebbles and they're round and there's no mineral that we know of that grows in a round shape when it grows naturally.
They're jagged and kind of look like crystals.
Yeah, exactly. Think of a crystal. So when this rock broke, we probably broke into jagged pieces because it breaks along these fracture planes where these two minerals meet. So how does it get round? Well, it gets round on Earth by rolling down a stream.
Mm-hmm.
If it rolls down a stream, you go to a riverbed, you pick up a bunch of round cobbled rocks.
The over time, the water has smoothed them over, it's polished and buffed them.
And the physical abrasion of a big rain coming, the rock rolling into and bumping its neighbors just grinds it away.
Mm-hmm.
So you find that on Mars. And we go to you go to a really dry place, you don't find these rounded rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So we see these things on Mars that really suggests that there was water flowing on Mars at one point. How did you round all these little pebbles unless you actually had water moving? Now, there's obviously no water on Mars now. We're driving around, it's dry. But if you find these rocks and you can do some more tests, you can really come to a conclusion that there was water at one time flowing on Mars.
Yeah.
Not just sitting there.
Wait, in a lake. I feel like when we do that, we know our solar system. We know the atoms that comprise most of the molecules.
Yep. The periodic table.
We have the periodic table, at least from our own planet, kind of sorted.
Mm.
But are we locked into that too much?
Yeah, that has to...
It has to be
those. It has to be that.
Because we couldn't get to Mars and go, oh, there's a new element that does grow round that could be this type of mineral.
That
couldn't happen.
The laws of physics should be the same... On our solar system, a different solar system. That's why people argue that, oh, you could have non-carbon life, all these other things. It's true, you can, but nature takes the cheapest route.
Mm-hmm.
And carbon-based life forms are the easiest way. Carbon's light, it can make four bonds, it can make chains, it can make rings. It's by far the most versatile element to use. If you're going to find life out there, I would bet 90% that it's going to be carbon-based.
But
otherwise,
isn't that
energy, it's expending energy to use a different element.
See, to be a bit of a hippie or an idiot, I think, far-off worlds, distant galaxies, their periodic table is, we couldn't even comprehend it. It's not even in the same realm.
No, because it's made out of subatomic particles, and we know those.
Mm-hmm.
We can measure quarks now, and gluons, and... Nuons.
Spuons and duons.
Spuons and duons. Hibbididuons. And no, yeah, I think I find that almost out of the realm of possibility.
Okay.
Yeah. If the laws of physics are the laws of physics, and we could look at stars that are thousands of light years away, and we could predict things about them, and we mm-hmm. can, you know, so I think it seems to work across.
Physics has done the most work to get us out way out there and have an idea of what is
and
there.
And it looks like the laws that are out there are the same laws that are governing us.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense
why it would be different.
No. Other than it's just fun to think that way. It's like a little kid and the imagination involved with, I don't want to think that it's this infinite depths of galaxies and universes and black holes and on and on and on. And there's literally infinity.
It opens up the box.
It's too much. I mean, you can't get your head around that. There's no end to it.
There's no beginning either, so it's easy.
See, I feel like somewhere out there is just a distant land made of only clouds, and on that there's a world. You know, they're just these bizarre, silly kind of worlds.
Yeah, I mean, there should be, right? There should be an end to the universe. It's 13.8 billion years away.
Right,
it started
right, from
expanding,
the starting, yeah.
So there should be some point there.
Like a membrane or some edge
to
it.
Yeah, a membrane's a good way to think of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know what's past that.
Because if you... Like, if it's a snow globe, and we're real deep in there, and then someone is holding that, whether that's someone from a different dimension, or a godlike creature, or whatnot, maybe their world could be gigantically different, hugely different than ours, in that it is cotton candy, or it is...
We could be a dust grain. Our universe could be a dust grain on the wall of another... garage in a bigger universe where somebody's doing a podcast.
Yeah, man. We're a single drop of water in a river.
That's a trip.
I think you need that.
That's a little too hippie.
It's too much. But I think you need that just because, to me, when it's purely science, it's fun and it's enjoyable to know that, like, we're gaining on it. We're exploring further out in there. But it's also the concept of infinity just is overwhelming.
Yeah. That's the downfall of space exploration. We're not going to see outside of our solar system.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you have to pretty much accept.
Are you into things like astral projection? Or what if you could virtual reality? What if a being landed here, teleported, and we went, how'd you teleport? And they go, well, listen, you, sit down. This is going to take a while for you to understand. But while you do, put on this virtual reality and enjoy my world. That's like the nicest thing you could bring to someone, like the animal going to a different one's den is going, whoa, yeah. Hey, before you attack me, put these on.
Right. This is how I see the world.
This is my world. How I see it. Oh, it's all butterflies.
That would be wonderful. But yeah, I don't see that being a possibility.
Damn it, man.
I'm sorry to rain on your parade.
No, I think it's
there's
good.
There's so many cool worlds to see, though. I mean, going to Europa, there could be life on Europa.
Which is weird because we, at least, again, our moon, no worlds
no
can
water.
Exist on. No water. So we think of moons equal no life. Moon is just an accessory to a planet.
We did think that way.
Yeah, now we don't. Now you can live on a moon. To me, it's almost the equivalent of like, well, we found this sun.
It needs to be a special moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So only certain moons, it needs to be far away. So it basically needs to be past what we would call like the rocky planets, which is past Mars. Because if you have a moon, Mars has a moon.
Yeah.
Phobos.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Mars has one moon? Just the one?
I think Mars has two big moons. Phobos Sweet. And...
Come on.
Know.
You can do... All right, I'll look it up.
I want to say Eos. That's an island in Greece.
Okay, let's see.
But anyway, the point was...
Phobos and...
Deimos.
Yep. Nice. Good work.
Right when you were starting to say it, I know.
I started to make the D sound and you got it, so that's full credit to you.
Thank you. Yeah, so those are also dry moons. So these are way... They're too close to the sun. They don't have the right conditions to hold liquid water. But you get far enough away to places that are icy. We call them icy moons, like the moons of Jupiter. Now, these things are great because they can hold water. It's usually in the ice form.
Yeah.
So there's these big ice balls. Well, what we found around Jupiter is some of these moons are getting tugged on by Jupiter. They're getting squeezed into like a football, then back to a soccer ball, and squeezed into a football, back to a soccer ball. That heats it up. And that heat melted the bottom tens of kilometers of ice. So now you have this ice shell with a big ocean below, and that's a perfect place to put a whole bunch of life.
Yeah.
So, you know, we used to think, oh, you gotta like be in this Goldilocks zone, kind of where Earth is. That's where liquid water is stable. And then we started going out to these other places and we're like, oh shit, you could actually have liquid water in places where all we saw was ice.
Because to bring that back to our planet, they drilled down into Antarctica. And under the ice, there's a lake.
Lake Vostok.
And it's huge.
Huge.
So that's essentially...
It's been essentially isolated from the planet for
And they were worried about that when they let air into it, the microbes were going to get there. And I think they screwed it up.
They screwed it up the first time.
They
did physically screw it up the first time. I think they had to like do a side hole because they contaminated their... what they were going to test.
And that's it. Then you've ruined it, right? And you can only get one chance there.
Well, yeah, but there's like these little isolated pockets of the lake. It's a huge lake, but then there's kind of these little isolation areas.
Oh, okay. So we ruined
one.
It's
probably not mixing very well. So if we tapped into one area, hopefully we can go somewhere else. But they think they found little microbes.
That have been there from the beginning of time. From the beginning of Earth.
No, from the beginning of that lake.
Oh, okay.
Because remember, Antarctica probably didn't exist as a continent.
Yeah, okay.
It had to grow into its continent. So that lake has been isolated from the planet for, I think, like a few millions of years.
And we see stuff like that. Say we were to, if we could, I don't know how, but on Europa, drill down and send a rover. It drills down, it sends a microscope, and sends that back to us.
It's doable.
And if we could do that,
I would drill microbes.
Drill by heat.
Yeah. So you put like a little bit of uranium that you're getting your power in the front of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just going to heat the cone up and it's just going to work its way down as it heats. The problem is it has to drill down, do some exploration and take some data and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way to keep like a tethered wire or something to a
It couldn't
dish.
Do like a grappling hook and send itself down and then come back up and unhook the hook?
It's going to freeze around
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and it's going to stretch.
Yeah.
We've tried this.
No, really?
But people have tried this.
Is this one of those like design competitions they would give like graduate students?
say,
yeah, right, like a Google Prize or something. Yeah, like National Geographic has these new exploration scientists, and I've got a couple buddies, and they go out and they do this stuff. They test, like, how can we get to Europa and drill?
Mm-hmm.
And this heat drill is a great idea. The problem is, so how are you going to send your data back? So you keep a dish on the surface, and you have an orbiter.
Uh-huh.
So that, and but then you need a tether.
This is just to look for a microbe.
Yeah.
This
well,
is
no, we don't know that. You could get down there, and there could be a fish.
You don't know that.
Fish.
What do we do with the fish? Do we put a tracking device on it? Do we catch it? Just take pictures of it?
What, that, I mean... That,
try to get a sample?
We start rethinking everything.
Yeah, because we couldn't get there. I mean, we can't even... The Mars mission is not going to happen.
There's a Mars mission coming in 2020, but Mars is a dead planet.
Yeah.
Mars may have had life. That's what, but there's... Nobody's tricking themselves into thinking that there's life on Mars.
Right. When we see these things, like... That looked like a skull. Oh, look in the distance. There's something shiny. There must have been something there. Right. And now this new thing with the rocks.
Right.
The more we see of Mars, the more it does have a creepy feel of maybe it was a planet that housed life.
Yeah.
And they... Do you believe in that thing of like microbes might exist on a planet, sending capsules out into space and hope that they burrow into a planet with the equivalent of like the DVD instructions?
But that can happen just by accident, right? So we call it panspermia.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that little microbes can survive on an asteroid and then that asteroid traveling to another planet. So there's a guy, I don't know his name, but the theory is called panspermia. It's that life on Earth was basically the remnants or the contamination of an asteroid impact from another planet that was knocked off another planet.
I think Francis Crick, joke about that sometimes. Like, he co-discovered DNA.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's Crick, the Crick, that's the DNA double helix.
Yeah, he took a lot of crap for saying that. He thought that was something that had happened.
Very well might be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think they call it panspermia.
I like it. I think there's something to that. But why does it have to be attached to, like, an asteroid or something? Just because it can travel faster?
Well, because that's how... I mean, like, little microbes probably can't figure out how to build a little mini rocket and, like, a little mini,
But what if we keep sending ourselves? I mean, obviously, there's a chicken and egg scenario where they had to have started somehow.
But so do we send a person? Or do we just send, like, a bacteria and we hope that we're right about evolution and that 4.5 billion years from now, there's going to be a person?
That's what I think. Walking. I think that we send
it, like,
bacteria.
A monkey. Can we speed it up a little bit? Like,
yeah, give it a head start.
Yeah, I mean, you're jumping a few billion years, but you could send them, or a rodent, at least.
It's so mean to monkeys, though. I don't like that we do that.
A mouse?
No, I don't trust it that they're going to evolve into us.
And but you're going to trust that a bacteria?
Yeah, I trust the bacteria more. Well, I trust what the...
You know the bacteria has to become the mouse first.
No, because I think the bacteria has a level playing field. You get to a planet and it feels itself out. It like grows to its environment.
True. It's very adaptive.
Yeah, it's more adaptive. Okay. I think the mouse would mutate and it could turn into something horrifying, whereas the bacteria might avoid that. Even it would take a lot longer.
So you're basically suggesting that we... take a bunch of little nano satellites and just fire them out into space so that a bunch of them hit different planets with...
But when they need a huge... They need mass. Maybe that's why we attach them to an asteroid to get them out there faster and further.
No, once we get them going, there's nothing out there.
Okay, so there's sun's pull, even though we aim them directly away...
No, that's proportional to both masses.
Okay.
So as long as it's moving in one direction and we gave
tiny.
It a good chunk to push, it's going to go.
Yeah, I load the shot in a shotgun and each one is packed with bacteria.
And just...
Boom!
Shotgun.
Shoot it out there.
10 gauge.
Yeah. And they come find me out in the woods. I'm like, what are you doing? I say, I'm making sure that future generations of humanity exist in other worlds.
I think it's doable. I think it's a good idea.
Let's take a little quick break and then we'll come back with more with Matthew Vialitsky. That's how I say it.
That was actually really good.
All right, so that was my chat. Thank you. I guess I shouldn't say all right coming out of every clip. All right. All right, some hits coming through. Great, great. Those are the hits, playing them up here from the cave. All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation and continue next week with the rest of it, and we get more into how to travel into space and how to extract and the ethical implications involved, and if you did find another planet or life on that planet, what would you do? And it sometimes feels like humans are heading toward other planets with only one intent, which is to build more Home Depots and housing developments and further
just devastate resources and blah, blah, blah. There's some of that talk, but it's pretty lighthearted, and he's a good guy, as you could tell. We drink more of the beer, and that's pretty much it for this episode. It's new, so if you want to rate it on iTunes, that would be helpful. If you have feedback, let me know. Tweet, you can email me at my website, davidhunsberger.com. Let me know. Try to be constructive. Try to be helpful. There are going to be plenty of things. There's infinite content in the world these days. You can choose from a lot of it, but you can also help make it better, too. So rather than just angrily go on a tirade about what you don't like, try to be constructive, and hopefully this will be something that you'll enjoy and want to be a part of. And if you do want to chat, tweet me your number. Keep an eye on Twitter for that. And if you want to be a guest, if you know stuff about the world, you're educated, or at least if nothing else, just kind of knowledgeable about a subject and feel like you'd be able to, you know, offer up some knowledge or expertise, let me know. Get in touch with me. And I think that's pretty much the show. I'm going to try to keep this going. My goal for this podcast is not to end it until I have read Gödel, Escher, Bach, which I've owned for, I think, over half of my life. And for some reason, I just never get around to doing it. I did the same thing with Moby Dick. And then when I found out what that book is about, it really seemed like the book Moby Dick was my white whale. And then I captured it. So I don't know what that means, but Gödel, Escher, Bach is kind of the same thing. It is my new white whale. I'm planning to read that. Once I'm done, then perhaps this podcast can be ended, but I guess not until that point. So if that's any indication, it'll hopefully go on for quite a while. Lots of conversations to have, lots of stuff to learn about the world. If I have any tour dates, you'll find them on davidhunsberger.com. I'm planning to do a kind of around the United States tour in October, thinking of calling it the canceled tour. And we'll see how that goes. Keep your eyes posted. Just keep yourself posted for that. Enjoy this song from Charlie Van Steve from his recent album, Slow Mo Jazz Hands. Check thespacecave.com for a link to that, or Van Steve. Just search that name, V-A-N-S-T-E-E, and you'll find it. It's really good. And thanks again to Rob Crow for the theme song. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.
Oh.